You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. You got Scotty and Tom taking you through the afternoon hours. KZUU is made possible in part by Heroes in Sports, located at 245 Northeast Kamiokan Street. Pullman's Hometown Deli offers a variety of sandwiches, salads, and soups with catering available. More information can be found by calling Heroes in Sports at 509-334-5423. So, if you want to get us on the telephone, it's 335-2207 on the web, www.kzuu.org, and on our show's website, www.thepes.com. So, today, I was abusing the system. You want to know how I abused the system? Well, I'll tell you after this.
Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WCU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need help, stop by their office in Ad Annex Room 305. They are open Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and Friday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected, would you feel scared, proud, or relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their community would also have an effect on your own? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather spend your life saying what if, or make your own way? Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, go to peacecorps.org. The Associated Students of Washington State University's Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender, and Allies Committee meets every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. in Smith Gym Room 303. All are welcome, regardless of gender identity, and this is a safe zone, which means that no one will be pressured to identify. For information, email wsuglbta@hotmail.com. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, feel free to contact KZUU at 509-335-2208 or email at gm@kzuu.org.
KZU 90.7 FM, Scotty and Tom in the afternoon. So, hey, Tom, this morning I was listening to the news.
Yeah.
And I heard a news story, and I knew you'd be flipping happily up and down when you heard
really?
That your candidate for president is going to be running Ralph Nader.
Ralph Nader, I actually did see that this morning as well.
I knew you'd be excited when you heard about it.
Yeah,
I could see the glow on your face. You even have your Nader 2008 shirt on already.
That is a blatant
lie. I don't know
lie.
How you got it so quickly.
I've had it on back order for weeks, actually. No, I mean, yeah, I did see that. And, you know, I wasn't really that surprised. He's read in, like, every single presidential election for the last, like, what, 20 years or something like that?
You make it sound like it's been a long time. He's only run 5 times.
Oh, that seems like a long time to me. Maybe, yeah. You know, that's like how long I've been alive.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, now that you are all sick and everything like that, I'm sure people can hear it in your voice. I'm going to allow you to talk as much as possible today because I want you to make sure that, you know, whatever sickness gets out of there, right?
Wonderful. That'd be great.
Yeah. So what's wrong with you now?
I got a little bronchitis.
So you smoke?
No.
No?
No.
How do you get bronchitis? I thought the only way to get bronchitis is to smoke.
Well, you know, I don't really know that much. You should ask someone else, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I figured you knew everything.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, Scotty.
You're not very sorry. Okay, so you got bronchitis, huh?
I guess, yeah.
Did you go to the doctor?
I did.
Did he? Is that what he's calling it?
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sucks. How long have you had it?
About 3 weeks.
Wow.
Oh,
you
yeah.
still sound pretty bad then after 3 weeks.
Thanks.
I mean that in a nice possible way. You
yeah.
I mean, I can hear your voice. It's froggy and everything like that.
Yeah.
Poor guy. So, anyway.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
So what's been new in your life recently, Scotty?
Well, I was on foreign soil recently.
Were you in Canada?
I was.
All right.
First time that I'd gone to Canada in 12 years.
Really?
Yeah. I don't go there very often. I've been there now twice. And the people I went with, they were a little nervous about the way I was acting at the border.
Did you have a suicide vest on or something?
No, I got up there, and it's one of those things where, you know, they ask you questions like, how many people are going up there? What's your business coming up here? Blah, blah, blah. You know,
right.
They're asking all those questions,
yeah.
And they're like, so why are you coming to Canada? I'm like, for a meeting. They're like, what kind of meeting? I'm like, for work? What kind of work meeting? Oh, okay. You know what I mean? It was just like I was being very brief and I wasn't being elaborate with my answers. So he was having to dig for information. And the people I was with, they're like, you should have just told him straight up it was a meeting for work, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm like, so on the way back, we get to the American side.
Yeah.
And he goes, where are you coming from? I'm like, Maple Ridge? So I was like, duh, Canada? No kidding? That's where you're coming from?
Where else could I be coming from?
And then he asked, where do you live? And I'm like, rent. Pullman? The guys with me just thought for sure we were going to get pulled out because the guy...
You're just acting suspicious and like halting with their answers and
well,
stuff.
Well, I was changing my answers halfway through
yeah.
and then all of a sudden he's like, could you turn off your engine? And I'm like, sure. So anyway, luckily we weren't taken out or anything. And
not interrogated in the back.
No, and here's the thing. And you know, I didn't want to get political about this and I don't think this is overly political. I just wanted to point something out. One of the guys who I work with is Indian.
Yeah.
And he has a full-out beard, everything like that. And as far as racial profiling went and stuff like that, there was no racial profiling. We didn't get pulled out in extra scrutiny or anything like that because we had an Indian guy with us or anything like that. And, I mean, the way it sounds from everybody else talking, I mean, if you're Indian and you're trying to go across the border, I mean, good luck.
Really? I haven't heard that.
Really?
I don't think.
No. Okay. Well, anyway. It wasn't the case.
That's good.
We went across the boarding. We went across the border and everything went swimmingly.
That's good to hear. Glad to hear that.
Did you like how I threw that word swimmingly in there?
That was nice.
You like that? You know what that means?
Yeah. I'm familiar with that word.
Are you? Okay.
Yeah.
You and the frog in your voice?
Yeah. Pretty much.
So, I was telling you, I was abusing the system today.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what you meant by that.
Yes, I took the bus when I had a gas guzzler I could have driven instead. Isn't that abuse of the system? I could have driven a car and saved that seat for somebody else.
Uh-huh.
But instead, I abused the system by taking the bus.
I'm proud of you, Scotty. Way to go.
Now, if you dig in further, you'll find out why I took the bus.
Did your car break down?
No.
Were you tired of subsidizing autocracy in the Middle East by paying $3.15 a gallon?
No, actually, I'm more than happy to continue paying for my gas guzzler.
Okay.
Actually, I'm not happy to do it, but I'm more than willing and going to do it. But
gotcha.
So anyway, I was on the way. Okay, 7:00 in the morning.
Yeah.
I'm riding the bus, and you got to ask yourself one question. Why in the heck are you even up at 7:00 in the morning, let alone riding a bus anywhere? But anyway, so there I am riding the bus. Why am I on the bus is the question. The question is, the reason is because I needed to park up on campus because after the show today, I have to be in Moscow at the place of appointment by 2:30 on the nose.
Ooh.
And it's going to be tight, exactly, because it's like, well, you know, usually if the show gets done exactly at 2 o'clock, I still have to turn off the computers and do all sorts of stuff, get out, get to the vehicle, get over there, park, and then get to my place. So I knew it was going to be right tight. And I have a orange parking permit, so I can pretty much park anywhere on campus.
Right.
Anywhere there's a parking spot.
Yeah.
And that's the big gotcha. There's not a lot of parking spots out behind the dark, damp dungeon, so Smith Gym.
Right.
And because of that, I had to park. I mean, normally I'd have to park Beasley or something like that and make the trek in. And I knew if I had to park that far away, the ability for me to make it to Moscow would be dramatically decreased. So I was like, golly gee willikers, it's 7:00 in the morning. Who in the world's going to be parked behind the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym, right? And I go by, the parking lot's full at like 7:15 in the morning.
Wow.
I'm like, who gets here at 7:15 in the morning? Seriously, come on.
Workaholics.
So, yeah, so the parking lot's full. So I go across the street,
yeah,
and there's like four or five yellow spots that I know of amidst all the gray one parking.
Yeah.
And I found a spot. So I took
Congratulations.
It. Thank you. And then I figured, well, if I take a spot now and I guaranteed myself a nice close parking spot, I could take the bus home. So it drops me off right near my house.
Yeah.
I walk home, do whatever I need to do, and just make sure I get the bus and get back here on time. So
there's
I could
a high degree of planning.
There was yeah, a lot of planning.
Pretty precise operation.
I appreciate you noticing this, because this was definitely not something that was done on a whim. I thought it through, and I said, okay, it will work. But I said the only way to do this is to abuse the system and to take a bus when I didn't need to, because I could have driven myself.
Wow.
So all my green friends are going to be proud of me because I was saving.
Ralph Nader will be proud of you.
Yes, your favorite candidate.
Yeah, clearly.
And so anyway, I took the bus. But what was interesting was this, is the kinds of people you see on the bus at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I got in, and downtown Pullman, this person gets on the bus. And at first I said, is that a guy or a girl? Because I couldn't quite tell.
Yeah.
But the person sat down. And I realized, okay, it is a guy, Adam's apple, the whole works there. But the dreadlocks and the pop can tabs that were strung in and through the dreadlocks throughout the hair.
Wow.
What was the most amazing thing about this whole thing, though, was he took the bus one stop, which essentially got him across the street from Neal Public Library. No joke. From Neal Public Library across the street to the bus transfer station by the Cougar Depot. We're talking.
It's like 100 meters. Or not 100, but it's pretty close. It's like
yeah, 100 couple, meters. Yeah, 100 yards in America.
All right.
So anyway, I mean, you Canadians can talk however the heck you want.
I'm not Canadian, Scotty.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I got to ask you, did you have to take your passport when you went to Canada?
No, I refuse to give my biometric information to the government to put into their databases.
You don't have a passport?
No, I refuse to give my biometric information to allow to be put in the government databases that I have
passports
no control
aren't
over.
Biometric, Scotty.
But they can. The newer ones.
Are they?
The newer ones have
RFID. Well, the new, and it's not biometric.
I was going to say the newer ones have RFID.
Oh,
and
okay.
They have the scanners that if you have that with you, they know before you even get to the place who's in that vehicle. Think about that. Think about that.
Yes.
You being in the vehicle, they know who you are before you even introduce yourself. Is that something you want happening?
That's pretty crazy. Well, I mean, you said it's an option. I mean, can't you just not get that option? You're not going to get a passport at all? You've never traveled?
I'm not
outside
going to
the country besides Canada?
Just Canada.
Okay.
I don't need to go anywhere else.
Oh, fair enough.
You know, one of these days, maybe the government will force me to get a passport outside of my will.
That seems unlikely.
You know, I don't. Unlikely.
Well,
nothing.
I mean, half the. Like, I think more than half
the Real ID Act, if that goes through, we're going to all be forced to give biometric information. And the problem is that if I'm forced to give biometric information via the Real ID Act, then it's not going to make a difference if I get a passport or not at that point in time.
See.
And it's all been taken away. Now, like the state of Washington has, I don't know if you've heard about the smart ID card or whatever it is. It goes along. The idea is that there's a way now that you don't have to get a passport, and in the future you'll still be able to go to and from Canada.
Okay.
And I believe Mexico as well. I think it's just because they're the bordering countries.
Right.
But the idea is that you can show a special Washington state driver's license, but it fulfills the Real ID Act stuff because it does contain biometric information.
Right.
So you have to be willing to give biometric information for this Washington State ID card. And it costs like $40 versus the normal $15. And they say that you have control over the biometric information and that if you choose, you can have them remove your information from the database.
So
you have to trust that the person you talk to is willing to remove that information.
Right. Just a quick side conversation, if you're willing. We've discussed immigration policy before on the show. I think
maybe
A little bit, a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that.
Sure. That's right, because I wanted to just make a big, huge cement wall that goes from, like, San Francisco to the border.
I think that was, something like that. That was the vague outline of your plan. But, like, what about biometric information? Like, it seems like that might be...
Oh, I'm so against taking biometric information from people and throwing it into government databases.
That seems like that might be a good way to tell, you know, who's a legal citizen, who's not.
So we hold a database of information on every single American citizen. That's a good way of telling who's an American or not?
Well, I mean, we have to have some way of telling who's an American citizen or not, right?
What about a birth certificate? When you get born in America?
Yeah, those are pretty easy to duplicate. It's my understanding. I mean, it's just like a Social Security card, and you know they have services. Maybe biometric information. I don't really know that much about
biometric information. Have you ever watched the Minority Report?
No. No, I'm not.
Now, I mean, if you...
is that based on a true story?
Well, it's futuristic.
I know the plot of it. I'm teasing you.
Okay, so the whole point is that it's very... I mean, granted, it's very, very futuristic, and, you know, a lot of the things in there are implausible, but I think some of the things in there are coming down the pipe. The idea that when he walks into a store, they recognize who he is by an iris scan... And via that, the advertising as he walks around is tailored towards him.
Yeah.
You think that that's honestly a far-off thing? I don't think it is.
I mean,
web browsers already do that. I don't know if you know that. But
no,
yeah,
I know what you mean.
They track the kinds of stuff you do. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Based on the information that you're looking for, it puts ads up there that are related to that. So this is not a far-off, far-fetched idea.
Right.
The advertisers see a great market for that. So what they have to do is have some way of knowing you are who you are. And whether that's via an RFID that's somewhere that they can siphon off and read, or whether that's through biometric information of an iris scan, or facial scans, because here's this. That's actually something already used, is facial recognition scans.
What do you mean already used? In where?
There's already software that's available that you can take a photo of somebody and then use essentially another photo and be able to recognize, or, you know, like, let's say... You have the photo of the person, and somebody comes walking through. You get a good shot of them on the on a video camera, and you can use that video camera in the facial recognition program, and it will search its databases of faces, more or less, and it will try to recognize a face for you.
Right.
That's something that's already been in use. And my question is this: why is it so necessary for the government to know everything about us?
Are you asking me that question?
Yeah,
let me ask you a question.
Okay. What is it that the government needs to know about us? Why do they need to get this information about us? Why do they need to hold it in their databases?
Well, I mean, what kind of...
What are they going to do
like,
to...
Is it structured? Do they have that information? No, I don't think they do.
The Real ID Act, why do they want to have biometric information about us? Why is it necessary?
Right.
What are they going to do with that information that they need it?
It's my understanding that could be a pretty important component of enforcing immigration law.
So people are going to try to use the immigration law to backdoor this into all of us. Because seriously, what are they going to do with this information about me?
Right. Well, you seem like you're the subject matter expert on this issue. What exactly is entailed in biometric information? Is it just, you know, eye color, or is it like eye shape, or
biometric information?
What are the components of biometric information?
Biometric information can be a number of different things, one of which would be iris scans.
What about fingerprints?
Fingerprints, I don't know if that's necessarily considered biometrics, but I believe it is.
Right.
Like, my computer, for instance, has a fingerprint scanner.
Does it?
And that's how, actually, I log into the computer. And that's how, like, when it's locked. Yeah. It's a finger. I'll show you maybe next week. I'll show it to you.
Yeah.
So when I open it up, it says it's locked. I actually have it locked out at the BIOS. So once it starts booting, it won't even go into Windows until I scan it to get past that point. And then once it gets to the login screen, I just scan my finger and it logs me in. Because my fingerprint is connected to my computer account. And... I have it set up to scan like 3 or 4 different fingers. That way, if I ever lose one,
right, yeah,
I can still get scanned in. But it's sort of random fingers. Now, the thing, though, is that I sincerely debated on whether I wanted to do that or not. And I'm still a little bit dubious about the fact that this program in the background and some like minor little thing says, oh, by the way, we send this information to the authorities. You know, so then they're sending off my fingerprints from my computer via the internet to some government agency that holds on to it. Now, in my situation, my fingerprints are already on the government records because I had to get fingerprinted for work-related purposes.
Right. Me too.
And because of that, I have no choice but to be in there. But to continue getting more of my biometric information is not something that I'm comfortable doing.
Right. Okay. So I'm sorry. What other kinds? Like
iris scans. Retinal scans. Iris
and
scans.
And they can put this information in a card?
Well, by the iris scan, for instance, they can scan your eye. I mean, essentially, as you're walking up, you know, through a thing, all of a sudden it hits your eye, boop, and it knows who you are. Because I guess, I don't know what it is about the eye that is... Or what about the iris that is so unique that the scanners can do this?
Yeah.
But I suppose if you look real closely at your eye, you do have little... I mean, it's not like a perfectly blue eye. I don't know what color your eyes are anyway. But from here, they almost look black.
Thanks.
The lighting in here and everything like that.
They're green.
They're green?
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're not solid green, of course. If you look closely at them, they have different, you know, little itty-bitty specks of color here and there. And I don't know if that's what the scanner's looking at. But essentially, the idea is that, I guess my biggest thing is what does the government, what are they going to do with this information that it's necessary for me to give it to them?
Right.
And an optimist might. Well, the answer they're probably going to tell you is, oh, nothing. We're not going to do anything with it. Right? Or are they going to tell you exactly, well, we're going to use it to frame you for a crime someday down the road. And in the future, if a crime happens, we're going to use the database to figure out who you are and bust you for crimes. Or, you know, at least put you at the scene of the crime. And you know, look how well DNA evidence... I mean, DNA evidence right now, at least, is sort of considered pretty much infallible. People are let free because of the presence or the non-presence of DNA evidence.
Do you really think the government's in the business of framing people for crime? Do you seriously believe that?
Now you're making me sound like a conspiracy theorist.
You are a conspiracy theorist.
I am not. I'm concerned. No, see, that's the problem.
That's ridiculous.
No, I didn't say that the government is framing you for crime. I'm just saying the potential possibilities of it being there.
Well,
if I don't give my information out, they don't have it. They can't do anything with it, right?
Okay.
If I give it out, an unscrupulous person within the government ranks, or an unscrupulous person who has the power... could do something. Are you saying... I mean, seriously, think about it. How many government officials are there throughout the country? And are you saying every single one of them is 100% every single time honest?
No, not.
And the chances of something happening realistically are probably really super low.
Yeah.
But why give anybody the keys to have that ability to do anything?
I mean, hopefully this is the kind of information they protect, like they protect nuclear information. But I mean, like that. I mean, it seems like to me... I mean, we already entrust the government. I mean, they could theoretically blow life. I mean, they could destroy the entire planet if they wanted to.
That's fine.
I mean, that's,
they're doing themselves in as well.
Okay.
And the whole point of the power over me is a moot point.
Right. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
It's just that I have the power over myself versus somebody else having the power over me, which in some ways the government has way too much power over me than you know, I've ever prescribed to give them away.
Right.
Give it to them. So I just I think that it's not necessary to hold the kind of... I guess my view is that they don't need all that information about me. They have my birth certificate on record. They have my ID. And yeah, there's a lot of things that can be broken. There's a lot of things that can be duplicated. And, you know, the United States money, for instance. Oh, we have to go away from the old style looking money and do all these security features on our money in order to make it so they're not being counterfeited. But my golly gee willikers, they're counterfeiting the new stuff as quickly as they were the old stuff. I mean, it... Yeah.
Who are these people?
Evil people. That's the word of the day. Evil people.
Fair enough.
And so anyway, there you go. I'm just not a big fan of giving my biometric or other information out to databases. Now, here's the thing. And this, I mean, I might be being silly about this because if you really think about it, there's very little to no true privacy anymore necessarily. I mean, drive around the city streets, how many cameras, not here so much as over in the Seattle area especially, but you see cameras on top of streetlights everywhere. You see cameras all over the highway system. And, of course, they use it for traffic flowing purposes, but what else can they and do they use it for? They have all the different grocery stores and other stores that have the monitoring of stuff, and that information is recorded. I remember something just real recently happened over in the Seattle area, and they were going to nearby stores asking for video surveillance of their, you know, that might be hitting the driveway or the parking lot or the street out in front of their store, and they're trying to gather all this information up.
Right.
And so then here you live up on campus, right?
Yeah.
And you use a ID card to swipe to get into your building?
Yeah, yep.
So where do you think that information is stored?
I actually don't know.
So do you think that they keep logs of that realistically?
Of course they.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
So they have a log of when you come into that building and every single time you come into that building.
Oh, well, you know, I don't know if that's
the maybe not every single time, because you might tailgate somebody from time to time. But for the most part, every time you swipe that card, there's a record that you went into that building at that time. What if your parents said, "Hey, you know,
possibly
what?
I don't really know.
My boy Tom,
yeah,
should be being a good boy and studying. I want to know if at 2 o'clock or any time between say midnight and 6 o'clock in the morning on any day of the week that he's using a swipe card, because that means he's not in bed, which means that he's up, which means he's probably out and about doing some naughty stuff. Now, granted, that's a very minor way of using this data against you, but think about other things that it could be used for. Think about this. What if somebody is an evil, bad person, and they're out, excuse me, evil people. Evil people are out to get you, Tom. And what they're going to do is they're going to grab a hold of all the records they can about you, and they're going to get that database of records, and they're going to go, "Hey, look at this. I've noticed that every single day between 10:30 and 10:45, Tom swipes his card at this door."
Yeah.
So if we go there at 10:29 in an inconspicuous-looking van, dress up like maintenance guys, as soon as Tom comes to that door, because we know he's going to be there, we're going to grab him, throw him in our inconspicuous van, and slowly drive away. Nobody's going to know that we took Tom for a while.
Where do you find time to think about this kind of stuff, Scotty? Like, I'm just saying. Hanging out.
So,
hey, wait a second.
So here's the thing. So then you add that. Okay, so there's just the WSU ID swipe card, right?
Okay.
What? And then you go beyond that. So, okay, all of a sudden now you have your Safeway Club card or Albertson's preferred member card or whatever you want to call it. Do you realize that they keep track of the purchases that you make with that card, and they keep track of all this information, and they put it, they use it, they also can use that for advertising purposes, which is why they do it, but they know how much you're, they know what kind of items you're buying, they know all this information.
Sure.
You, every time you swipe your debit card, which you probably use all the time, and let me just sidetrack here. I do those very often.
Yeah.
There's these commercials about, I think they're Visa, the debit cards, where like this music's playing and everything's flowing nicely. It's like swipe, 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 and everything. All of a sudden somebody stops to pay cash and everything goes down.
Yeah.
And then they swipe. And I'm like, you know,
usually,
that is such a joke, because whenever I'm at the store and somebody pays cash and somebody's using the credit card or the debit card,
longer.
Always takes longer.
No, yeah, I thought the same thing.
I think it's a ridiculous commercial.
Yeah.
Anyway, going back to the debit card thing, every time you swipe that card, that purchase is being recorded. The purchase that you recorded that you purchased this. Now, what about
this? Hopefully, yeah.
So here you are. You're in Pullman, Washington, and you bought gasoline for your vehicle, and you swiped your card at the machine, and it tells you exactly down to the second what time it was that you swiped your card. Okay. Now you're going to drive to Issaquah, Washington, and you're going to buy some more gasoline, right? Now, when you get to Issaquah, Washington, you swipe your card again. And the time difference shows 3 hours and 17 minutes. What's that mean?
That would mean you're speeding.
It means you're speeding. So all of a sudden now you get a ticket in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe what they do is they go, oh, wait a minute. Tom has already purchased gasoline once this week. Therefore, he's going to get a surcharge of extra taxes added on because he can't purchase gasoline more than once a week. Or how about the whole GPS thing? They want to put GPSs in every car. This is true. They want to put GPSs in every car and track every mile that you drive and what road you drove on and when you drove on that road. And you know why? Taxes. Tax money. What they want to do... Washington State and Oregon. They're talking about this. Oregon already has a pilot program where they're doing this with certain people. And the idea is that because of all these hybrid vehicles...
Yeah.
Hybrid vehicles. Now, that's another thing. If somebody drives a hybrid vehicle, not only are they smug... Not only are they smug, they are trying to save the environment, right? So here's the thing. I'm a good guy, right? I go to Seattle, and I'm like, hey, I'm going to park my big gasoline SUV in a parking garage at a metro, which is the bus system, a metro parking garage in order to take the bus instead of driving my big gasoline vehicle. Well, I'm driving around, trying to find a parking spot, and there's three parking spots right up front, really super close to where the buses are. And what do they have above it? Reserved for hybrid vehicles only. And I'm like, wait a minute, so I'm trying to help the environment and park my vehicle, but I'm forced to park in Timbuktu, and Joe Blow, who has a hybrid vehicle that's supposedly saving the environment, we're going to give him a benefit by parking him up front. And I'm like, shouldn't it be the opposite, saying only vehicles with less than 10 miles per gallon could park here that way?
You sound a little bitter about this, guy.
No, I'm not bitter. I just think it's silly that I'm doing the right thing by parking my vehicle, and I'm getting penalized by making him park in the way and back. And I'm walking further just to get to the bus than I probably would if I drove and parked in the parking lot of the place where I was going. Anyway, getting back to the whole hybrid thing. So because of the hybrid cars and all the government incentives that they've been giving towards hybrid car owners, another thing that I think is silly.
Well, I mean, they gave incentives for SUVs for a long time as well. I mean, tax breaks and that kind of thing.
For buying SUVs?
Yeah.
What kind of tax breaks have they given?
For buying an SUV?
Yes. I never got a single tax break for purchasing my gasoline vehicle.
You should have looked into that, because there's for decades there was a restriction, or there was a tax break, a tax write-off for buying a vehicle over a certain amount of pounds. It was intended to help farmers, but then once SUVs had started getting in there, and people started buying pickup trucks and, you know, for Ford Explorers, and that's what I have.
Explorer?
I have an Explorer at home.
Wow, nice.
And, I mean, when actually consumers and not just farmers started buying this, there was this big thing where everyone was taking advantage of this tax write-off.
Sure.
But, yeah, now the tables have... Okay. Things have changed a little bit.
So anyway, so you got these incentives for these hybrid car owners to do their thing, and because people are trying to be more conscious about the amount of miles they drive, because the gas prices have gone up, causing people to drive less, you have people buying less gasoline. Now, how are the roads in the state of Washington funded? Well, a lot of it is by gasoline tax. Well, if people are driving less miles to begin with, and those who are driving are getting 35, 40, 45 miles to a gallon, they're not consuming as much gas, which means the revenue from gas taxes are going down, which means one of two things. You either have to find a way to tax people differently, or you're going to have to raise the gas price taxes or gas taxes some more.
If people aren't driving as much, then hopefully the roads won't need as much maintenance.
Well, I think the roads will still need the maintenance necessary. I mean, if you just let your cement go, it's going to go bad. I mean, you have to keep maintenance up on the roads.
Sure, but I mean, if there's less drivers, but maybe, I mean, you're
and,
right.
And you still have roads that you need to build. Anyway,
sure.
So what they want to do in order to make up this tax difference is put GPSs in cars. And what it would do is it would, rather than charging you per gallon of gas, it would charge you per mile driven. Hmm. And the idea is that, and of course, some of the hybrid car owners are like, well, wait a minute now.
Yeah.
I have this car that I bought because I don't want to, you know, and all of a sudden now I'm getting penalized by having it. And this guy, Joe Blow SUV owner, is now getting a benefit because it doesn't matter how many gallons he uses.
Right.
And so you got the greenies.
That does seem a little weird.
You got the greenies on one side. Well, I, as one of those guys that likes the fact that all men are created equal and that we should all be treated equally, whether I drive an SUV or a Toyota or a Prius, I should be paying the same amount of taxes as you, right? Why should I have to pay more taxes than somebody else? Now, granted, I know that if I pay gas taxes, for every gallon I use, I'm going to pay X number of gas taxes.
Yeah.
But if we're going by road mileage, why should it matter? Because the Prius is putting miles on the roadway that's causing the roads to get degraded, and me and my Toyota are doing the same thing, and me and my Dodge are doing the same thing. The thing is that that's not really the point. The whole greenie thing, and they're trying to, oh gosh, we got to give incentives for the people who have hybrids, and we got to make it more. And that's one thing they've actually talked about: a higher tax burden for people, depending on the gallons per mile that you get, or the miles per gallon you get. Gallons per mile, that's awesome. For some SUVs, that's about what it is. Anyway, depending on how many miles per gallon you get, the worse off you are, the higher your tax rate will be. And they'll know, okay, he's driving an SUV, and so his tax rate might be, say, 17 cents a mile, whereas Toyota Prius owner has 5 cents a mile, or something like that. But anyway, to go on with that, they also want to track what roads you drove on. This is definitely in the talks. What road you drove on and what time of day it was. For instance, if you drive on, say, 520, which is over in the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, they're going to charge you a ton of money. If you drive on it at, say, midnight, they're not going to charge you quite as much. But the idea would be is that they
the
would...
The system seems very comprehensive. I mean, it seems like it would take a lot to monitor, and I don't know, maybe not.
I'm just saying, this is where directions that people are wanting to take the whole entire thing. Right now, it's at a real simple, basic stage where, and from what I understand, I think it's the Portland area has a test program going. I'm not sure where else in Oregon. But the idea is a whole bunch of car owners got these little GPS things, and essentially, as they drive around, it keeps track of their miles. And then when they go to fuel up, it charges them taxes based on the miles they drove and not how many gallons of gas they're taking. But here's the thing. If they're tracking how many miles you drove and they have the ability to track what roads you're driving on, where's your anonymity? Where's your personal freedoms going to go? They're going to know what roads you're on, when you're on the roads. Okay, something happened in the area. They're going to blanketly find everybody who was on the road in that general vicinity over a 3-hour span, and they're going to question you for everything that's ever happened in that area.
This whole system seems pretty weird. I mean, I've always liked the idea of the per gallon tax, if we have to have tax gasoline.
Sure.
The per gallon tax, because, I mean, it seems like
it's about
you're paying a penalty for you know, the negative externalities that you're imposing on the environment when you're driving.
Sure.
You
know, if you're green,
that seems very intuitive.
If you're green, that's a very good way of looking at it.
Okay, how do you look at it, Scotty?
I look at it as a necessary evil. Yeah. We have to have roads. And I like to have roads to drive on. Yeah. I like to have roads that are in decent shape to drive
on. It kind of makes sense.
I like
that
the fact that they plow my roads and everything. So, exactly. It makes sense that as I drive a vehicle that, you know, I pay a certain amount.
Because maybe some people ride bikes and, you know, maybe they don't need...
But they take the road. I'm paying for the road that they're on, so they better not think that they have the right of way. I was going down Stadium Way summer.
This is a separate issue.
Four bicycle riders in a row riding 20 miles an hour in a 35 mile an hour zone. And you know what the problem was? It wasn't that they were doing 20 and a 35. That was a problem. The problem was is that there's a bike path for them to be on, and they chose not to be on it and to be on the road and to back up traffic. Don't do that. No,
you sound bitter about this.
I'm not bitter.
You're very bitter today, Scotty. What happened in Seattle? You just got exposed to the liberal left, and you got
exactly
kind of,
when you're in the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. County for any length of time, it really causes you some problems.
Really?
Oh yes.
I don't really hang out there very much.
Exactly. Look at you. You're an even-keeled guy.
Wow. Yeah.
Seriously, this
trip really polarized you guys.
No,
You
got me on a.
I didn't do anything.
Got me on a subject that I have some opinions about.
I didn't do anything.
Some minor opinions.
Reacting.
No, of course. Yeah. Exactly. But it's just a subject I have a couple opinions on. Some just really middle-of-the-road opinions. Because I think most people believe the same way I do. I mean, I can't imagine that people don't believe the way that I do. I mean, any sane person would believe the way I do.
Okay.
But anyway, so the overall point is that it's I'm not a fan of the idea that all this information is being taken from me against my will. I use the Safeway card, and I know that this information is being stored about me.
Right.
I know this.
And in exchange for that, you get a discount. Right?
I get a discount, and I'm choosing.
So it's kind of a conscious decision.
But I'm exactly, and I'm choosing to do it.
Right, because you can not have a Safeway club
card
or whatever it is. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
And when I choose to use my debit card, it's the same kind of thing. I can choose not to do it.
Right.
Now, in the residence hall situation, if I could swipe my card or use a key, but knowing using the key takes a little longer than swiping my card, I might choose to swipe my card because that's a choice. But when it becomes something that is forced upon you, you lose that choice. You lose the ability to say no.
That's what
I'm against.
I can respect that. I mean, that's
and that's why the you know, just the idea of the GPS thing.
Yeah.
I have a GPS in my cell phone. I know that. And I know that they can triangulate off of towers.
Sure.
I don't know if you heard about the guy that disappeared over in the Seattle area, SeaTac, guy named Francisco something. The celebration of Valentine's Day. Did you get a big thing of chocolates for your girlfriend?
I didn't, no.
Do you have a girlfriend now?
No, I don't.
See? You should have got her chocolates.
Yeah. That's... Thanks, Scotty.
Anyway, he calls home and says, hey, honey, I'm leaving the office. I'm going to stop by Costco, grab some stuff. We're going to make some cookies with the kids when I get home, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Never makes it home. Wife calls a little bit later on, nowhere to find him, goes on and on and on and on, and his car is finally found in Federal Way at some condo complex that he'd have really no business being at, and his wife and them, they don't know anybody that would be there, and his car had been parked there a couple days. And somebody
it took a couple days to find them?
It took a couple days to find the car, because finally somebody in the complex noticed it and goes, oh, wait a minute, there's a car of a missing guy, that similar description, check the license plate,
really?
The license plate,
yeah,
so the guy calls it
lucky.
In.
That's pretty lucky.
So, but the person is still missing, they don't know where he is, and they've been trying to get cell phone records. Well, there was a situation that happened several months ago with a lady in the Seattle area as well,
mm-hmm.
that had driven her car off a roadway into a ravine, and... They don't know where she's at. They don't know where she's at. And the police are like, husband, what did you do to her? Seriously. He's like, I didn't do anything. She's just missing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever. What did you do with her? You know, and the cops did their cop thing. And the husband's like, no. Seriously, she's missing. I don't know where she is. I'm freaked out. Finally, after a period of time, because of the way the laws are for privacy purposes, the cell phone companies won't just quickly give you this information. Even if you're the cop saying, hey, it's a missing person. As far as the cell phone companies are concerned and the privacy advocacy groups are concerned, as far as they're all concerned, people have a right to privacy. And people have the right just to walk away from their life if they want to. And if I choose to walk away from my life, and I don't want you to know about me and my new life, and the cell phone company gives away my cell phone information... Then you know what's going on with me, and I wanted to walk away from you.
So how long did it take them to get the information about the Seattle guy?
So what they have to do is they have to get a search warrant and all this kind of stuff. And I guess the cell phone company has to get – my understanding is they had to get information that this person has not used, say, his credit cards in several days. And, you know, sort of show a pattern that there is something going on.
Right.
Then with the cell phone company, I think it's the courts that need that information to sign a search warrant. Then the search warrant is given to the cell phone company who then gives the information out. Well, with this one lady, they finally got the cell phone information. They triangulated, said, okay, the last tower she was near was this one. So, therefore, she's within a 4-mile radius. So they knew it was a 4-mile radius of that area. They started doing some looking, and they found the ravine. She was in this car upside down for 6 days, and she lived. But she definitely had some issues.
No kidding. Wouldn't you, die of thirst?
You would think so. I don't know exactly what she had to help her with her thirst and everything like that, but I think she was really dehydrated, and, you know, she was hanging upside down by her seatbelt the whole time as well, and she was injured and stuff. So, yeah, it was a really bad situation. Of course, then a husband is going back, see, maybe if you guys would have spent less time questioning me, more time looking, you might have found her 6 days sooner or something like that. Well, anyway, so you got this. So a lot of people are looking at that situation, and they're relating it to the situation that's going on with this guy from SeaTac now, saying, hey, you need to get the cell phone records as quick as possible and figure out where he's at. But here, the difference, though, is they found a car. They didn't find him. He hasn't been answering his cell phone. And they're talking about this on the Seattle area media, and it got me to thinking about something. Your cell phone, for instance, how long? I mean, if you were to just leave your cell phone on and not put it into a charger, even if you don't answer it and talk on it, especially if somebody's looking for you, a lot of people looking for you, you're probably getting lots of phone calls on it. What's going to happen to your battery?
Right.
It's going to drain down. It's going to die.
Your
cell phone's going to turn off. Yeah, after a couple days. So here's the question. When your cell phone battery dies to the point where it can't get any more incoming calls and it turns off, can the cell tower still see you?
I don't know.
And if you turn off your phone, is it the same way?
So do you know the answer to these questions?
I do not know that one. And that was one I got.
It's like the Socratic method.
No, I was definitely thinking about this, and I should probably try to find this out because I'm sort of because here's the thing: let's say I have to wait, say, 3 or 4 days to get the credit card information. That thing I could go to the courts, and the courts will then say, "Okay, we'll give you a search warrant," and then we'll go to them. But what if in this process of doing all this time that's passed by, cell phone battery goes dead now?
Right.
Our closest tower was 2 days ago.
Right. It doesn't seem like it would, because doesn't it need to be sending a signal to the tower? Right.
Right.
Or at least receiving a signal, and you can't do that without a battery. So I don't know. It seems like.
But I guess my only question would be: even when a phone's turned off, is it truly totally off? Are you using a power? Is it able to get some sort of signal? Because my question is this, and here you go. when you turn your telephone off, and let's say it's been off for, say, 5 minutes, and you turn your cell phone on, your clock is still up to date. All your stuff is there. I mean, there's still power within the system.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe, I'm just maybe it doesn't update it right away. Maybe.
Well, it might. It very well might. I don't know.
The opening process.
Exactly. Yeah, it very well could be at that very moment doing it. But my question is, because there is power available to the phone, does it still transmit or at least be able to get some sort of signal going on for that period of time? I really don't know.
That would be interesting to know, yeah. Let me know if you're about that.
Because I know my cell phone, for instance, has on like my alarm clock on my cell phone. I can set it so I could turn my cell phone off, but I have my alarm clock set, and at the time that the prescribed time, it will actually turn my cell phone on.
Give
me alarm clock.
Yeah, I mean.
So I really don't know. I don't know a lot about the cell phones. I don't know if anybody would really know the answer to that. But anyway, so the point is that it was interesting to me because I was thinking, in the amount of time that they fuss over getting this information, is it possible that the cell phone battery dies and then you can't get that information again? To me, that would seem to be one of those things where you need to get that information straight away and discover what the heck's going on. But here's the thing that was really interesting about it, and I just was like, whoa, wait a minute here. The cell phone the wife herself calls and says, hey, you know, can you help me with this? This is what's going on. Cell phone company was more or less like, well, it's not his phone. You're not on the account. If she was on the account, no big deal. She could have then said, yeah, I want you to do this. But she's not on the account at all. And it turns out it's a work cell phone that he was using. So my thinking was this. If it's a work cell phone, then my work should be able to say, that right away. Yeah, I want my phone back.
I want to know where my employees are.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know why they weren't able to get that. Anyway.
But did they find this guy?
They haven't yet.
He's still missing?
He's still missing. They
still haven't got the records or whatever?
I read in the newspaper yesterday or 2 days ago now that I believe the phone company has granted the request just sort of out of the kindness of their hearts or something like that. I didn't read the whole article. I just got the headline. I want to read more about it because it's one of those mysteries that you're like, wow, I really am curious what happened.
Right.
The wife, of course, she's already saying she thinks foul play is involved because, well, she's like, he has no reason to run, no reason to hide. There's no reason that what's going on is going on. So she's really worried.
Well, didn't the phone companies get pretty burned after, they found the congressional inquiry and they found out that they had given over a bunch of records about cell phone records to the executive branch. Do you know what I'm talking about? This happened, it's been playing out over the last about 4 years.
Years. Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
I
know what I sort of know what you're talking about, but I don't think that's why they're doing it.
It's vaguely related to the wiretap, and they had to take a step back and say, well, we can't really, we can't be so open with our information. Do you think it's related to that at all?
I don't know about that. I think they've been doing this kind of stuff for a while. I mean, some ISPs, for years have always wanted subpoenas before they give out any information on their users, blah, blah, blah. But, so anyway, you're listening to KZU 90.7 FM. It's Tom and Scotty. We're talking about, where did we start out at?
Mostly ID cards.
ID cards, general privacy, that kind of stuff. So, and the phone number is 335-2207. So here's the other thing that this privacy or this DNA.
Okay.
This DNA stuff caused the death of somebody this weekend in the Seattle area.
Did it?
Yes. There was a well-known podiatrist who had been going out and he was taking really expensive, like $5,000, $6,000, or $7,000 bicycles out for test drives. And then he wouldn't show back up. He'd steal a bike that way. You just ride off with it with their permission.
Okay.
And so he'd stolen like 8 bikes or something like that.
Why would you even need 8 bikes? Was he reselling them?
I guess maybe. He would probably resell some of them. I mean, it's 5,000 or 6,000. But yeah, so he'd go
and
say,
he's a podiatrist. You think he'd,
he'd have some. Well, who knows, man? I mean,
he has a bike fetish.
Could be. So anyway, he went out there and he'd stole bikes, and then he'd go to this place and he'd be like, yeah, let me go for a test ride on this bike. And they let him go for a test ride, and boom, he steals it. He just doesn't show up. Well, unlike car dealerships that like photocopy your ID and do all sorts of stuff, they weren't doing that. So he just got away with the bike cleanly. Well, they, I guess because of this guy, a lot of the bike shops in that area now are requiring photo ID And like they're taking like a Polaroid picture of the person before he goes off and stuff, because they don't want it stolen. And I mean, that makes sense. It's like you're letting some. It's like, hey, let me borrow this diamond ring and try it on my wife's finger. I'll be right back. Trust me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, anyway. So this guy, like I said, he's a well-known podiatrist in the area, and he's dead. He's no longer with us on God's green earth.
Okay. You didn't elaborate at all?
Well, I was going to see if you were curious to know more.
I guess so. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here you go. Okay. He committed suicide.
Okay.
Because I shouldn't say obviously, but I would guess because the information about him is now out in the news and, his name is sort of bad. Because now all of his friends and all of his family, everybody knows that he's this guy that's stolen thousands of dollars. I mean, if he did it 8 times and it's a 4 or 5,000, you're talking $35,000-$40,000 worth of stuff that he's stolen. So it's definitely a high level crime. Well, anyway, because he was discovered.
How was he discovered?
He killed himself. How? Oh, good question.
Yeah.
DNA.
Okay.
In a government database. Was his downfall.
It's like when he went into a shop, a hair fell out or something like that.
He was drinking out of a cup of coffee or something like that. It's Seattle, so it's coffee.
Right. There's a complimentary in a store or whatever.
I don't know if it was complimentary or what, but he had essentially had a cup that he'd been drinking out of and it was there. They used that, got DNA from it, and matched it to a DNA in a government database and nailed him. Think about that. About your privacy is gone there. So by the simple fact
they also caught a bike thief, but that's fine.
But here's the thing though, is that it's like at what point do you allow your liberties to be? I would rather somebody get caught that did something than not get caught. But at the same time, I also want certain privacies to not get trampled on in the process. For instance, photo radar. I think that's a totally bunk thing, and I like what Tim Eymann's doing with his. I think his is mainly on stoplights, but it might also be on photo radar, one of his new initiatives he's trying to put out there, which more or less would make it so all the money brought in by those kinds of devices would have to be used like on the roads and stuff, and they can't be used. Some cities, they're like, oh yeah, that's a money haven. I'm going to put them in everywhere and use all this money. And now Tim Eymann is more or less saying, if you do that, that's fine, but you got to use it only on these things, which then the city might go, well, screw that. It's a lot of money to put it in, and we're only going to be able to put it on the roads. Might as well just put it in the road straight up. Well, anyway, I'm not a big fan of the photo radar.
Yeah.
I think it's I just think you go way beyond the capacities of what a government should be doing to police its people.
Yeah.
Using video and photographs to start policing people, I think you've gone way too far. We're getting way, way too far away. And people who get caught very well, by a cop who's sitting on the side of the road with his radar gun or whatever, very well could get busted for it or whatever. But I just think the idea of using electronic surveillance as a means of policing people, you've just gone too far. So anyway, the thing that was interesting in this article, it said only in Seattle would they use DNA to catch a bike thief. Because, he was more or less going on, the person was sort of more or less pointing out that, Seattle is such a bike-friendly area, and there's so many bike people there that only in Seattle would you care enough
I didn't even know bikes could cost $7,000. I had
no
idea.
No, it was like 4 or 5. But
still. That's still in the same category for me. I was thinking more like, I don't really know what bikes cost, but I wouldn't have guessed that.
Well, I could pull up the article.
I know it's probably pretty fancy bikes or whatever, but how fancy can you get with the
bike? Well, I think the metals that are involved in the bikes and stuff like that could be some
like
very
platinum special. Or like,
gold.
Yeah.
Diamond encrusted. I don't know, man. I really don't. I'm not that much of a
bike for rappers.
They have, spinners and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm not big into the whole biking thing. I spent like about $150 on my bike. So
that seems like more what I would have guessed. Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure what this guy, what's so special about the bikes that would cause them. But anyway, so his, it was interesting to read the article, and I would pull it up right now and read some excerpts from it. Okay. But we're in the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym, and there's no internet access down here. I mean, we put a wire in once, but it's so damn close to hell that it melted.
Really?
Yes. Feel how hot it is in here?
It's pretty hot.
It's a sauna in here.
It is pretty hot in here. I agree.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Maybe if we had better people working for the studio, like, you know, more people like me and less like you,
right.
we'd be closer to heaven.
Probably.
But it's people like you that bring us, sink us closer to hell.
Thanks, Scotty.
And I enjoy the fact you're my co-host. You're such a great guy.
Kind of an angel in
death. Or I enjoy being your co-host. How about that?
Okay,
I'll make you the man.
That makes me feel a lot better.
Hey, no problem.
All right, well, I got to get going, Scotty.
No, you don't.
Yeah, just in a couple minutes.
Yeah, I know, in a couple minutes, exactly.
Okay, well.
It's not right now.
Just giving you a heads up.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm watching the time. I got, like, one right here.
Okay.
So, anyway.
All right.
Tom.
What's up?
What do you think about Ralph Nader?
I don't really have much of an opinion on Ralph Nader. If you're a Republican, then you should be cheering right now.
Yes.
That Ralph Nader's going to
win. And
that's
why you're so upset, I heard.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
your Barack Obama's not going to win now.
Well, I'm not really sure who I'm going to vote for at this point. But I mean, if you're Republican, I think you should be pretty happy because I mean, if you look, most of the elections in the last
The Democrats are mad.
20 years, yeah.
The Democrats
of course they
don't
are.
Think he has a right to run because, darn it, it's their turn to win.
Yeah.
If he runs, he's going to take votes from the Democrats. Well, if the Democrats are that darn good, maybe they wouldn't be worried about him. But the problem is this, is Hillary Clinton even, I mean, Barack and Hillary are both going off on the fact that he chose to run, that he's going to hurt the country, and he shouldn't run. He has, on and on and on and on. And finally, Hillary Clinton's like, blah, 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 but I guess it is a free country. She did say, I guess it is, but she goes, but it is a free country. And it's like, duh.
Yeah.
Anybody can choose to run. My goodness. Anyway, he's running on an independent platform instead of the Green Party.
Hmm.
So that might not be as much of an interest to you now that I know you're a Green candidate like her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so you should be in favor of Ralph Nader running. I mean, it might take a couple...
I'm in favor of anybody who wants to run.
Crucial percentage points from the Democrats.
Whatever. Maybe. Hopefully. I mean, that could be something that splinters off the party a little bit. Enough that maybe the Republican candidate will become victorious.
Well, you know, I mean, like, most elections in the last 20, 30 years have all been, you know, there's 40% of the population, roughly, that's going to vote for Republican no matter what, and then another 40% is going to vote Democrat no matter what. And so it's all about the 20% of the voters that are in the middle. And, you know, maybe, I'm not sure how many of those are Nader fans, but if, like, it could change the dynamic, at least, you know, a little bit, the crucial little bit. Going back to Florida in 2000, you know, maybe it's one of those situations. If it just takes a couple hundred more votes, you know.
All right, Tom. Well, you have a good day. This is PESKZU 90.7 FM.
That I will.
You're listening to the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. You've got Scotty at 1 o'clock. KZUU is made possible in part by Heroes in Sports, located at 245 Northeast Kamaikan Street. Pullman's Hometown Deli offers a variety of sandwiches, salads, and soups, with catering available. More information can be found by calling Heroes in Sports at 509-334-5423. Had a bad weekend? Need legal counseling? Student Legal Services at WSU is happy to help. Student Legal Services is a student-run organization that provides free legal advice to students. So if you need their help, stop by their office in Annex Room 305. They're open Monday through Thursday 9 to 5 and Friday 9 to 1. Speaking Japanese, if you please. Learn Japanese for free. Everyone is welcome to join in the good times at Neil Public Library every Tuesday. Beginners can learn about the Japanese culture and basic speaking and writing skills from 4:30 to 5:15 p.m. Intermediate students will focus on grammar and vocabulary from 5:15 to 6. And the advanced classes with one-on-one teaching meets from 5:30 to 6:15 p.m. Contact Kimi Hiroshi at 402-3903 or the Newell Public Library at 334-3595. KZUU DJs read public service announcements like what you just heard every hour. If your club or nonprofit organization wants us to read a PSA about you, come to our office in Smith Gym, room 126B, or fill out the form online located under the staff button and email it to psa@kzuu.org. For more information, phone our office, 335-2208. Reach me on the telephone at 335-2207. On the web at www.kzuu.org and on our show's website, www.thepes.com, where you can get all the information about the shows and even audio from all the previous shows. Stay tuned. Back to the PES on KZU 90.7 FM. Phone number 335-2207. There's a couple things I was going to talk about that weren't necessarily in the news today, but were in recently. One of which is a tech product for the tech part of the show called Magic Jack. I read about this in the Daily News this weekend and, well, last weekend, 2 weekends ago, something. Anyway, I read about it, sounded pretty cool, got it. Played with it a little bit. Now I'm going to tell you about it. I was going to talk a little bit about the Windows Home Server. I went to the WSU Surplus Auction last month, purchased myself a Pentium 4 class computer, purchased some additional RAM for it, so I met the minimum, at least the minimum specs on RAM. And I was going to install Windows Home Server. I found out I needed a little bit of a larger hard drive than what came in it, so I'm going to have to purchase one of those. And I very well might do that after I go over to Moscow for my meeting, since I'll be over there anyway and stop by one of the big box stores, Staples or Office Depot, and pick up a hard drive that they have for sale. And one of the reasons, I mean, if you don't know what Windows Home Server is, it's essentially a server for the home. It's lightweight for, and when I say lightweight, I don't mean heaviness, but it's made for people to use at their houses. It's not meant to be on a, you know, big production server, but the idea is that it will back up your valuable and precious data onto the server. It will allow you so you can actually share the information easier from one computer to another. It can actually, this is the really cool thing. Let's say you have four computers, one in, you know, maybe each of your kids' bedrooms, or, you know, maybe each person in your house, if you're, you know, with roommates, each of you have a computer and it's all hooked up to the same network. And somebody were to get this Windows Home Server, what would be really cool is each person's computer can be not only backed up for data every night and have that data secure, you can actually make an image of the computer itself, meaning the whole entire hard drive. So if the hard drive dies, the old-fashioned way of doing stuff is the hard drive dies, you buy a new hard drive, you put it in there. You format the hard drive, you put on your operating system, and then you install all your additional programs. You put your data back on the computer, and the data could be your photos and your videos and your Word documents for school or whatever else. So you spend hours rebuilding your computer. Well, with this Windows Home Server, the cool thing is it makes an image of that hard drive. So if your hard drive dies, you put your new hard drive in and you use Windows Home Server, and it recreates your computer directly onto that new hard drive you just put on that, put into your computer. And within a matter of however long it takes to transfer that data, within it, whatever it takes for that, your computer's back up and running. It's like it never died to begin with. Everything is exactly how you had it. All the icons on your desktop, everything is perfectly as you had it. What's nice about that is, once, you know, even with running the program, once you get the program running and going, it does everything on its own. You don't have to sit there and slave over this computer for hours on end. So it's a really, really cool thing to be able to get your computer back up and running in a matter of minutes, theoretically, versus hours upon hours upon hours upon hours. It allows you to also version, more or less version control, which allows you to, say, have a week worth of images. So let's say yesterday an image was made, and then yesterday night I installed some software on my computer, and it caused my computer to have some problems with drivers, which in turn I tried to delete something, and I deleted the wrong thing, and my computer just crashed. The hard drive's not dead, which is usually what kills a computer, but the computer itself, the software, is just all messed up. I can go back to the previous day's image and re-image my hard drive just as it was. Now, granted, you have programs called Go Back or other things that you could have on that one computer, but how cool would it be to have this done all on a server that's all in one location, and it will save the... It will do this for all four computers. And the bigger thing is that Go Back will not work if your hard drive crashes. And then all your data is securely stored, and it can do more or less a RAID system where you could have two hard drives and the data stored on each hard drive. So that way, even if one of the hard drives in the Windows Home Server dies, the other hard drive has the data. So you almost have triplicate copies of your data. And when you have certain pieces of data, such as photographs, that cannot be ever duplicated again, once it's gone for good. When you have triplicates of that, how refreshing is that? To think that you have it not only on your normal computer, but you have it on your Windows Home Server not once, but twice. That's definitely peace of mind. So anyway, I've been wanting to put my Windows Home Server together. I'm getting the pieces and parts for it, slowly but surely. And in the meantime, I've been using for quite a while what I call the poor man's method of backing up my data. I just have additional hard drives in my computer that are formatted and they're ready to go. And I was going to talk about all the exact switches I have and what the switches do, but I can't really talk about that right now because the internet is dead in the dark, damp dungeon of Smith Jim. So, unfortunately, I can't tell you exactly what they are, but I could probably post it to the show's website, and you can see what it is. But more or less, I just made a bat file that does an X copy. I tell it, and an X copy is just a special kind of copy. And what I do, more or less, is I tell it, okay, take all the data in this folder on drive D, let's say, or C, or H, or whatever I want to call the drive, it doesn't matter. But I take it all from one drive, and I copy it to a folder on a different hard drive. And that's why I call it the poor man's method, is because I use essentially a DOS prompt that copies the data from one hard drive to another hard drive. And I could do it all by hand using the Windows Explorer or whatever, but by doing it this way with the bat file, all I have to do is double click on one icon, and it goes through and it copies everything for me in the background. So I don't have to sit there and navigate through folder after folder doing copy, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I build this string that more or less says X copy. Then I say where my data is and where I want to copy it to. And then I put several switches on there. And what the switches do is I tell it to do recursive searches of the folders, which essentially means it goes down every single level of folders that are there, and it sort of spiders its way through the hierarchy of folders. I tell it to do, I only want it to copy files if the source, meaning that the file I want to save, is newer than the file of where I'm storing it. So essentially, if my source file is newer, I want to have it copied. If my source file is the same date or older, I don't want it to copy over. So that's another switch. And by doing that, it speeds up the saving process by a whole bunch because it doesn't have to copy over, say, 200 or 300 gigabyte of data. It only has to copy over only the files that have been modified, changed, or added since the last time I've done this. And I call it nightly backup as the icon name, and I double click on it, and it goes through and it actually copies all my data from one hard drive to two different hard drives. I actually do my data storage in triplicate. So I have all my data stored in one external hard drive, and then I have two internal hard drives that are the exact same size, and then I have it copy from my external hard drive to my two internal hard drives. So any one hard drive could die at any one time, and I'll still have two copies of that data. If two hard drives die, I'll have one copy. If three hard drives die, I'll be crying, and I'll be crying a lot because I would lose everything. Let's see here, stuff dating back to 1989, 1990, so I'd be losing, I'm really having a hard time here, 18 years worth of stuff, longer than my co-host Tom has been alive. So it would be a pretty devastating loss. Now, granted, I do have a lot of that stuff also backed up onto CDs, because I didn't have a DVD burner back at the time when I did it. Maybe that's what now that I talk about it with myself, I think I will do that, is I will start a project of burning all of my data out onto DVDs as well. So that way, theoretically, I could lose all three hard drives, and I'll still have them at least on DVDs. And granted, because I probably won't be burning them on a daily basis, I might lose a couple months worth of data at worst, or a week or two worth of data, but it won't be 18 years worth of data. And that's another great idea. And the nice thing about the DVDs, and if you have a safe deposit box or something like this, this would be perfect, because one of the things about backing up data is realistically you want to back up data off-site, which essentially means your data is in another location. And the reason why you do that is because of theft potentials, because of fire and flood and everything else like that could happen. So there's a big reason why you want to store your data off-site. And I think on the telephone with us, we're going to have Tom Forbes. How are you doing, Tom?
Good. How are you, Scotty?
I am doing great. It's good to hear your voice. I was just actually talking about saving your hard drive data off-site, having backups. And being a computer guy yourself, you probably totally understand the idea of having off-site backups and whatnot of your data.
Sure, or if you are going to store it on site, you need to have some sort of fireproof safe that you can keep it in.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I was saying, because of fires or the possibility of theft.
Right.
And by putting it in a fireproof safe, you've helped both of those problems. So,
sure. Yeah, anyway. It depends. It depends on, a lot of companies are going to this concept of having like a hot site backup. And in fact, you see a lot of this over in Central Washington, like in the Wenatchee area and Moses Lake, and those are areas where the because of all the dams on the Columbia River, the electricity there is ridiculously cheap. So what a lot of these big companies have done, well, first of all, there's like a lot of what they call server farms located in those areas. Like I want to say it's Malmstrom Air Force Base, or what used to be, I forget the name of the Air Force Base, but anyway, there used to be an old Strategic Air Command Air Force Base in Moses Lake. I don't know if you've ever seen it before. It's extremely cool. It's this giant runway, and these big bombers used to take off there. I mean, since it was relatively close to, our old enemy, the Soviet Union, and up here in Washington, there were, a lot of bombers that back in the 50s that were there. In fact, there were even missile bases surrounding Moses Lake, too, as part of that. But anyway, at this Air Force Base, they had tons of space. This was like, the Air Force Base was closed down like a long time ago, back in the 60s, and Moses Lake, it went to the city of Moses Lake, and they have like a community college there now, and some of the other, there's a building there that I guess used to be like the command center for the bombers. And, it's just this huge, big concrete building with like no windows and everything. I'm sure it's all reinforced and stuff. And so it's perfect, for these people that are wanting to do what you call like the off-site backup. They have, free electricity, and they can, it's very secure. And Moses Lake is, pretty far away from anything, and it's not subject to bad weather for the most part, and so it's a good location. And so I think they have it stuffed to the gills with all these servers and stuff where people are able to back up their data. And You know, and some companies also have, like I said, like a hot thing where it's like they can just, if something happens to their main site, they can just go and then flip a switch, and then all their data and stuff is right there, and they're back up and running in a relatively short period of time. Rather than having to, you know, restore all the data to their existing servers, they just go to another, you know, remote location and just and get their network up from there.
Okay, yeah. My company sort of does that. We have a more or less a redundancy in our data center. We have one data center in Seattle and one in Portland.
Right.
That way, if Seattle goes down, we switch straight over to Portland, and then we're still up and running as far as our business goes.
Yeah, and I think Google, not so much from a backup standpoint, but just, you know, because Google obviously has such massive storage, you know, with all of the crawling of the web that it does, it just, you know, has a lot of storage, and then plus, you know, what is it on Gmail now? It's like, I'm not sure. They did have like a 1 gig limit, and they bumped it up to 5 gigs on your mail. I'm not even sure if they have a limit on your mail anymore. Like, you can just keep as much stuff in there as you want. And so, you know, obviously they have terabytes and terabytes worth of storage space, and it's distributed, obviously. It's, you know, obviously not all sitting in one building down in California. And in Hood River, Oregon, which is just up the Columbia from Portland, up in the gorge. That's another place that has, you know, cheap electricity thanks to the Dalles Dam, which is like right nearby. I think Google opened up a big facility there, like as a server farm. So
interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's really you check into this. Like, that's a booming industry, especially in Central Washington, like in around George, you know, over there by where the gorge is and Ephrata and Wenatchee and that whole area right in there, and around Chelan too, like the Chelan County. Yeah, you know, all those areas there are, you know, the electricity comes from what they call, you know, PUDs or public utility districts, and, you know, they just get it right off the dams, you know, because there's so many dams right there on the coast.
Yeah.
It's just dirt cheap, you know, and so that works out real well for, you know, for large corporations that are, you know, going to have high electricity bills from running, you know, the servers, and plus, you know, not just the servers, but also the massive amounts of air conditioning that are required, you know, 24/7, 365.
Oh, yeah, I can only imagine. Servers, so. On a server room that huge, holy smokes.
So it's kind of interesting. Yeah, I've been over there. That Air Force Base, I wish I could remember the name of it, Bergstrom or something like that, is really kind of cool, because not only, you know, like I said, does the city of Moses Lake, you know, do stuff there, but the runway, I guess, is leased by, because the runway is like 10,000 feet plus long. It's like it's an emergency runway for the space shuttle. That's how big it is. You know, if there were ever a crisis and the space shuttle needed to land quickly, it could do it in Moses Lake. You know, Boeing, when they take their big jets out of Everett, they fly them over the Cascades over to Moses Lake, and that's where the airlines that are going to be buying, like, you know, the 777s and stuff like that, do their acceptance testing. So it's really kind of cool to you can go there over in Moses Lake and watch these 747s and 777s come in, and they do like touch and goes on the runway. You know, they'll kind of put their wheels down for a few minutes and then pick up and go back and circle around. You know, just as the pilots kind of start, you know, breaking in and training with them.
So is this relatively close to I-90 that you'd see it, or do you have to get off the beaten path a little way?
It's not too far. It's maybe, oh, I don't know, about 10 miles kind of to the northeast of Moses Lake. So it's not right off of the interstate, but you can definitely see the planes. I'll never forget, you know, before I knew about all this. This is back when I had first moved out to Washington, and I was driving from Seattle over to Pullman, and it was kind of late in the evening. I remember looking off. I was probably in the Othello area, roughly, you know, in the middle of nowhere, and I remember looking over to my left and seeing, like, a 747 really, really, really low. You know, like, it was, I was like, oh my God,
it's
that
gonna
plane
crash.
It's just like, you know, there's no way there's a 747 landing in Othello. And of course it was landing up in Moses Lake, because, you know, Moses Lake is only about maybe 30 miles north of Othello.
So. Oh, okay.
So yeah, it was like, it just kind of freaked me out. I was like, I was waiting for the big, you know, cloud of smoke and fire to come up. Because, I mean, it was very close to the ground. So, but then later I was like, oh, okay, that explains it. So yes, that's quite a big activity for Boeing. I think, like I said, that's where all their first flights of their planes go over to Moses Lake.
Wow, that's very interesting to know. I didn't know that. So We had some more news in the newspaper about a possible another business wanting to locate out. I think it sounds like it's more on Airport Road than the corridor, but it's just off of the corridor, I believe.
Right. Yeah, like a kind of a construction slash engineering type business, and it's called Strata, I guess, is the name of the company, and they're seeking a rezone from the county commission to have the, because the land right now obviously got rezoned to, you know, retail, and they want to have it rezoned to heavy industrial.
Right, and that's what made me sort of curious, because I guess when I was reading it, it sounded like they wanted to do like a business park type of thing, or like an industrial park or something, which to me meant that they were going to have possibly room for other businesses, not just themselves.
Sure.
And I was just sort of, and I don't know a lot about Strata or what it does or anything.
I've never heard of them before either, so that was the first I'd ever heard of them.
Well, I did a search. I finally found the website, but it was very slow in coming up, and it was having some ASP.NET database issues, so I wasn't able to really get a lot of information. And it actually,
they need to hire you, Scotty, to
exactly what I was thinking. It looks like this is actually one of two offices. Like I said, I didn't get a lot of time on the website, but it almost looked like Boise was mainly where they were based out of, and they also had a place here in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I guess from reading the article, and I'm sure you read the same one I did, I got the feeling after reading the article that it was a local Moscow-based business, and the owner, who is also local, wanted to move it over to the corridor. But after reading the website, and like I said, I didn't spend a lot of time reading it, I sort of got the feeling that it was a business with a couple offices, and this might be just one of their offices, and they're looking to move it maybe to a, and I don't know why they would have chosen Washington for this situation unless they wanted more land that they couldn't have in Moscow, unless there was some reason that they wanted to get into Washington since it's based out of Boise, and that way it would look like they have a Washington office and maybe they got something going on. I really don't know what would attract them to Washington necessarily. So,
yeah, I don't either. Or it could just be this, the perception that Moscow is a very business unfriendly climate. Whitman County, by contrast, is getting a reputation as a place that is willing. I mean, the commissioners, going the extra mile the way they've done to try to partner with Hawkins, to make this deal go through. That says a lot more. I mean, you can say that, there was a story in the paper on Saturday, too, about, I don't have a problem with this. I think it's a gigantic waste of time, but, in theory, I don't have a problem with it. But, I'd been to the Knowledge Quarter Summit back in October of 2006, and, the biggest thing out of that was I needed to come up with a logo.
You got to start somewhere.
So it's like, okay, now they've come up with a logo, and it's like, that's great, And I mean, if that's what they want to do, that's fabulous. And as long as they don't spend a lot of money on it.
Let me guess, their logo or their slogan is replacing business with snobbery.
No, there's no slogan, just a logo, which is probably better to stay away from the slogan. But I mean, okay, it's great to have a logo, but I mean, you and I both know that a business is not going to relocate, somewhere because of a logo. And it's fine to have one and everything, for your graphics, if you're going to be running ads and magazines about, please come here. But what means more to a business than anything else is, they're going to look around and at the regulations, and they're going to look at the government and say, okay, are these people that we can do business with, or are they going to fight us every step of the way? And so, more than any slogan or logo or anything, what the Whitman County Commissioners have done to make the Hawkins deal happen, I think is really sent a clear message to any businesses looking to locate here that, that we really are a place that's serious about, working with business and attracting new businesses. And so I think we'll be reaping the benefits of that as time goes by. Now, whether this had anything to do with that Strata decision, it's just pure speculation. But I'm glad to see, that they're locating there. I mean, the corridor is going to turn out to be, we've already got James Toyota coming in, and
right.
I think it's going to be a real, be a real varied collection of businesses, which is as It should be. You know, it's not going to be all retail. Everyone's like, oh, it's just going to be wall-to-wall shopping centers. No, it won't.
And is that a problem, though? Seriously?
Well, it wouldn't be a problem to me because it's like any business that wants to come in and locate here, I think, they have the right to do that. But, I mean, honestly, we are we're just an area of, between the two cities, about 50,000 people.
Sure.
And, the retail.
You can only have so much retail.
Exactly. And so, it won't be, everyone's going to, it's just going to be one long strip mall. That's not going to be the case. And that's just.
Not in our lifetime.
No. And what's going to happen is there's just going to be a lot of different things that find it advantageous to be between the two cities will locate there. And there will be things like car dealerships, logical location.
Sure.
Business parks, logical location because the workforce is between the two cities.
Yeah.
And the shopping mall. And I think another thing that's going to be into the mix, and there was also another story about that in the Daily News on Saturday, was housing. There's some concern the city government has about Whitman County allowing people to build houses near the airport. I mean, if you've been out on Airport Road,
they already have some out there, though.
There's already some little cluster houses out there that have been built because the county does allow for cluster development,
right?
And around Pullman, and so other people have taken advantage of that and built houses. And I think we're going to see more of that again because it's a strategic location. If you locate there, no matter where you work, whether you work in Pullman or whether you're in Moscow, it's a nice central location. And there are a lot of families around here that have. One spouse will work in Pullman, and another spouse will work in Moscow. That's very, very common. So that's, I think we're going to see all that, go in the corridor. Because again, it's just the natural location to have all that.
And I would love, for the commercial aspect of it, not just the retail, but like, I would love to see maybe one of these big server farms, which it wouldn't make much sense to locate here, but something where, I guess one thing that Pard says that is very true is that we need more high-paying jobs in the area.
Sure.
And keeping Walmart out is not the way of getting more high-paying jobs.
No.
But I would agree. I would love to see more high-paying jobs. One of the issues that I have, there is a certain class. My understanding, Schweitzer's hiring up a storm again, and I'm sure they're going to be hiring a lot of engineers and a lot of people, but... I guess maybe I'm just looking for the high-paying jobs in the wrong sector of the economy. I'm hoping I would love to see a lot of high-paying computer-related jobs that aren't necessarily working for the university.
Sure.
And that's because I'm a computer guy. But if I were something else, maybe I'd want them in that sector. And maybe the way of getting it done is do what Schweitzer did and start up my own business and make it happen.
Yeah. Having a lot of high-tech businesses, on the Palouse, it's not a slam dunk by any means. It's definitely problematic for many different, reasons. One of which, and they talked about this at the Knowledge Corridor, summit, is that, we don't have a lot of entrepreneurs around Moscow and Pullman. There's not a lot of millionaires that have a lot of extra cash laying around to invest. Unlike, say, Silicon Valley, California, you have hundreds of venture capital firms that are located there that have lots of money to spend on, new startup projects. We don't have that around here. So anyone that's going to do a startup here and gets venture capital funding is going to have to get it from outside. And over time, if that company prospers, then there will be tremendous pressure to move that company closer to a more built-up area. So this, because I forget the name for it. I had the term at one time. There's an economics term for this, but I forgot what it is. But essentially it has to do with the concept that like businesses build close together. Like Silicon Valley, for example.
Sure. Yeah, go to an area where there's computer businesses, and there seems to be tons of them.
Because you can share resources. You share suppliers. You share the labor force. It's much easier... you go, they would want to locate near someone else because they're competitors. Nonsense. All this talk about, that we see all the time about, one store comes in, another store goes out of business. It's nonsense. Most stores, even of things and businesses of similar types, love to be close to each other to share customers.
Right. I believe.
Or in the case of businesses, to share resources, to share the same labor pool or what the case might be. So, we don't have that either. Other than Schweitzer, there's a few other smaller technology firms,
right,
in Pullman and Moscow, but nothing substantial. So, you know, I mean, I would love to see that, but it's, you know, there are a lot of, you know, difficulties to overcome, and we may have to resign ourselves to being the place that where, you know, businesses may start. You know, we may have these little small entrepreneurial startups, but then, you know, realize that, that over time they'll probably grow. You know, like the students, you know, they'll come here, they'll get their start, but then eventually they'll graduate and move on.
Yeah.
You know,
somewhere else. And some will probably stick around, but
yeah,
for the most part.
Some will stick around, yeah. But, and, you know, and that's okay. You know, that's okay. It's just, you know, we have a lot of things working against us. You know, we're very geographically remote. We're, you know, 75 miles away from the closest interstate, and we don't have a major airport here. And, you know, there are a lot of logistical, you know, hurdles to creating
right.
a new business.
But, see, that's the one nice thing about, like, a knowledge base, like a computer system base. I mean, something like that, it's all done over the wires, not over the, you know,
sure.
over computers, not necessarily airports and interstates, which could be helpful to get that kind of business here. The only problem is that you have to have the knowledge in the manpower to be able to back that up. And, you know, I don't know if Schweitzer is seeing that so much, but from what I've understood in the past, it's hard to recruit the people in a lot of ways. It's like, in a lot of ways, there's more jobs than there are people to fill them in the area, because you're looking for somebody who has a certain skill set, and there's not a lot of people in the area
right.
that necessarily have that skill set. And those who you're trying to bring into the area come here, and they're like, well, it ain't bad, but I can't afford this house, or
right.
there's not enough houses, or
absolutely.
And in some cases, I just don't want to live there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a very valid point. You know, Schweitzer, and not just Schweitzer, but I think the universities and other people or other companies around here have a very difficult time recruiting people to come here because, you know, of the factors, you know, that you mentioned. You know, whether, you know, I know that professors move here for the co-op and the Renaissance Festival and all the other
oh, yeah.
crap that they tell you, but that's not true. I know personally of many people, professors and other people have declined to move to the Palouse because it is too, you know, and lack of another word, rinky-dink for them. You know, there's a lack
sure.
of shopping, lack of cultural activities, you know, lack of a lot of different things. So, so that's one thing. I mean, that is a vital piece of the puzzle, is to make this area more, you know, people go, well, we don't want to make ourselves more like the rest of the country. Why not? Because if we make ourselves like more like the rest of the country, other people are going to want to move here. You know, if we want to grow those high-tech jobs, we're going to have to be more like places that these other people are coming from, because you're not going to find a whole lot of people that want to sign up for, you know, that kind of remoteness. You know, people are used to a certain level of amenities. Housing is another issue, you know, because, again, because of our, you know, restrictive land use regulations. You know, housing in both towns, particularly in Pullman and Whitman County, is very expensive.
Lumber prices.
And you're good. You know, you got to have people. You want. I mean, you can't have everyone coming in making $100,000 a year, but that's almost what you have to buy a house around here. So you're locking out a lot of your, you know, your lower paid workforce. You know, I mean, in the case of Schweitzer, a large proportion of our employees come from the Lewis and Clarkson Valley.
Really?
Yep, because
wow.
because the housing is so expensive in Pullman and Moscow. That's why Ed Schweitzer has been such an advocate for loosening up land use regulations in this area so that we can have more affordable housing, you know, for employees of Schweitzer.
So I got a question for you, because you're talking about that kind of stuff. Schweitzer had brought forth the idea a while back of an area of land around the company there, having it like a mixed-use zoning where I believe it would be like restaurants, housing, and it would be sort of not necessarily low-income housing, but it would be affordable housing, I guess you could say, or lower-price
right.
housing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say it was going to be put up probably, I was thinking it was in the area where the main headquarters are now, and maybe up towards the WSU Industrial Park, or that
yeah,
area.
Exactly.
Is that something still in the works that you know of?
As far as I know, it's still in the works. It's just, I think they're just working with, you know, various developers and real estate people trying to find the right mix. You know, because obviously, if you're going to have mixed use, you want to try to get retailers or restaurants, you know, in addition to houses and things. So I think they're still just trying to, you know, to put all that
gotcha.
Together. Again, very difficult. You know, it's very difficult. You know, I mean, again, the popular perception is we're being overrun by big box stores, but you know, the truth of the matter is just the opposite. It's very difficult to recruit anyone
right.
you know, to come to the Palouse. Like, I think with Old Navy, I believe the paper said they had worked for 5 years of arm twisting to get Old Navy to move into the Palouse Mall.
Wow, I did not know that. That's
so
incredible.
It's not a slam dunk, and it's not as
sure.
easy, you know, as everyone says. And of course, you know, we've all heard the stories about how Target has twice turned down, not just Pullman Moscow, but also Lewis and Clarkson as well as for a location.
Really? Huh.
And so
I would think Target would fit in Clarkson nicely. All the meth users. No, actually, what I'm hoping for in that Switzerland area is I want to see like a little convenience store / gas station type thingy that would have Diet Pepsi and a fountain. I mean, right now, I tell you what, driving
to... I know, the north end of Pullman is very, it's very slim pickings on any convenience store type.
You got to go all the way up to Tesoro to get your Diet Pepsi. And when I need to go, I live up there, you know, just off of Terra View Drive pretty much. And sometimes I need to go work at another place just off of Terra View Drive. So to do a 2-mile round trip for 44 ounces of pop seems like a hell of a round trip. When if I could just go across the street and grab my pop and then, you know, get to where I need to be, that would make life so much nicer. So if you want to throw that into Schweitzer for me, that would be great.
just being an employee of Schweitzer would be awesome just to have a place right there within walking distance that you could go over. I mean, we have vending machines and stuff in the buildings, but it would be nice to have more of a full-service you know, convenience-type place to... or even gas. They have a gas station there, too. That's even better as a place to gas up while you're leaving work or coming to work also.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the other thing, too. It's like, let's say I need to go to Colfax. It's like, well, I like to go out the Albion Road because of being at Terra View Drive, you hate to drive 2.5 miles just to get to 195 when you're, you know, right near Albion already. You just zoom on that way, but it's like, oh geez, I need to get gas. Now I'm already halfway there. I might as well keep going that way. But
sure.
Yeah, I mean, gas and then like a restaurant or something like that. And the problem is, and it's not a problem, you know, Pullman does have a reasonable supply of Chinese places, couple Mexican places to choose from, quite a few fast food places to choose from, but you know, not necessarily like the sit down hamburger joint like an Applebee's or a Red Robin or something. And I wouldn't mind to see an Applebee's come in. I'd love to see a Red Robin come in, something like that. So throw that towards Schweitzer as well.
I think that was one of the things that they were looking at was some sort of a restaurant. That was one of the things I remember was being in the mix was, you know, a restaurant. And they were also, you know, looking at like some sort of, you know, we were really trying to get some kind of hotel to come in and do kind of a conference center.
But you guys have a conference center.
I know. We couldn't work out something, so we couldn't wait to have one. So
you
built,
did it on
we
your
built our own. And
how does Schweitzer feel about WSU now built?
Well, see,
in
now that might
like
complicate
that.
Things by having WSU build one. So that you know that all has to be factored into the mix.
Isn't you know? Here's my thing. By WSU duplicating things that we already have on here, they're taking away land and putting up this big, ugly, boxy building. And we already have one within arm's distance,
right.
And now they're going to hurt Schweitzer by doing this. I don't understand this. Where's the outrage?
Yeah, go figure.
I am outraged.
which brings me actually to the final final point I wanted to share with you before I have to go.
Alrighty.
2 o'clock thing I have to go to, but it is interesting the circular logic that gets used in some of these arguments. You're familiar, of course, with I know, with all of the arguments that were made about, we don't need another Walmart in Pullman, Scotty. We've got one in Moscow. It's just 6 miles away.
Exactly.
It's just 6 miles. It's
that's a hop and a skip and a jump.
It's quicker than driving over to Safeway for some people to go to the Walmart in Moscow.
I saw that on Palousetix.com, and that just cracked me up. I'm like, yes, driving to Moscow is faster than driving to Safeway.
Yeah. Oh, but now that they're building the Hawkins development, which, of course, is just a few hundred feet away from the Moscow Walmart, it's bad because it creates sprawl, Scotty. It's going to make more people drive over to Moscow, and how can we do that with gas prices going through the roof? And global warming, my God. So there you go.
Oh, nice. All right, Tom, I appreciate the call.
All right, Scotty, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, have a good day.
Bye.
Bye. Once again, Tom Forbes, former co-host of the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM, broadcasting live from the dark, damp dungeons of Smith Gym. It's about 45 after 1 o'clock, and I would like to, let's see, I was talking a little bit about backing up computers, and Tom, of course, talked with me a little bit about that as well, and, you know, made our way back here to Pullman after we went to Moses Lake for a little while there. So anyway, talking about the off-site backups and stuff like that, like he was talking about, you know, he talked about having a safe. That's a great idea. A fireproof safe. You put your data in there, and hopefully it'll be safe. You know, I was talking about if you had a if you had DVDs you burn it on, and you could put it in a safe deposit box, maybe even just keep it in your car. Car's not a very secure spot for it, but it's theoretically off-site, especially when you drive to work. Or maybe if you have a desk at work that you could stick something like that in, stick them in the desk at work. Because worst-case scenario, your house burns down, you have your data backed up at work. They have now companies that you can back your data up to them online, and you pass it over the internet. The only issue I have with that, and this goes back to hour one when the other Tom was here, the issue of control, the issue of having your stuff on somebody else's computer. I don't like the idea of me giving biometric information, excuse me, not giving, but being forced from me, my biometric information put onto put onto government servers. At the same time, I would be able to choose to put my data on servers that are off-site. But the only problem would be that I don't truly have control over those servers. I could delete stuff, but is it truly deleted? Are they going to get rid of it? Is somebody going to be malicious someday down the road and take my data and use it? Is it, you know, there's just too many questions that I have about pushing my data across the internet and storing it on somebody else's servers. Sure, you could have all these checks and balances, and you can say, oh, yes, we background check all our people, and we do this and do that, and on and on and on. But unless it's truly in my control 100%, I don't necessarily trust it. I mean, I don't think anybody should trust, put that much trust in anything else, I mean, unless you have your own control over it. So I just don't like the idea necessarily of using those resources. Some people might not have a problem with it. They might not worry. I don't have anything to hide, so why should I care? And if that's your point of view, more power to you on that kind of stuff. But you got to also realize that you might not have anything to hide that you know of. Just remember that. It might not be that you have anything to hide that you know of. How many people, say, 35 or 40 years ago thought they were going to have to hide the fact that they smoke cigarettes from anybody? Who knows what kind of stuff that you're going to have about your person that you're not going to want other people to know? And who knows? Maybe there will be one photo or one something that isn't that big of a deal, but in the wrong hands, it could be a huge deal. Anyway, that's, you know, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Microsoft Windows home servers where I was, the poor man's method of saving data from one hard drive to another that I use currently. And I'll probably, once I go to Windows home server, I'll go away from that. But my poor man's method cost me nothing other than the hard drives. My other method, Windows home server, is going to cost me a lot because I had to buy a computer, I had to buy a new hard drive, had to buy new RAM, had to buy the operating system, Windows home server, blah, blah, blah. So anyway. Okay, and I also talked a little bit technology-wise about this product called Magic Jack. Now, Magic Jack is essentially a telephone jack that is run through the USB on your computer. And what's so special about this is you actually get your telephone service through these people as well. So what happens is you buy this product called Magic Jack. Costs $35 for the first year, and when you get it, it's just essentially just a little box that has a normal plug-in for a telephone, and it doesn't matter if you use a cordless style phone or a hard-lined phone the whole way. You plug in a USB, it installs the software for you, and then part of the software process, you register, you choose a phone number. Right now they have phone numbers from about 20, 25 different states. And actually, I ended up choosing a phone number in the 213 area code out of the Los Angeles area. Don't know why I did that. As a matter of fact, within minutes of doing that, I said, oh, that was dumb. But anyway, that's what I have for right now. And then you you plug it in, and you can use it on laptops, you can use it on desktops, as long as you have a broadband connection. And then once you plug it in, your telephone works just like any old telephone. You pick it up, you make phone calls, you can do all the local and long-distance incoming and outgoing calls you want for free. You essentially pay $35 for that product. And for the rest of the year, it's free. So essentially, it's $3 a month for a telephone. And it beats paying, you know, a telephone service $30 a month. And it even probably beats some other VOIP services that might charge you $10 or $20 or $30 a month for that kind of same service. The additional years are about $20 a month. So after the first year, it's $20 a year. So for a full year of service next year, it's going to cost me just under $2 a month. And I had originally, I had chosen to get rid of my landline telephone and only go to a cell phone system about a year and a couple months ago when I moved from, I used to have an office on Nye Street in Pullman, and I vacated that, and I now work out of my house itself. I then at the same time got rid of my landline telephone for a whole bunch of reasons, and I could probably spend a good half hour going off on the telephone service and DSL service I got, but I only have 9 minutes, so I won't today. So anyway, I went away from my telephone, and I was only going to use a cell phone from here on out because I was like, I'm not paying $30 or $40 a month to have a telephone that people will then just telemarket me on. That's not necessary. And then I could have my cell phone with me all the time and blah, blah, blah. Well, as it turns out, when I found out about this service, I was like, I wasn't necessarily totally sold that I was going to get it, but then I decided to give it a try. So I was like, $35, and from what I read in the article about it, it sounded pretty cool. So I bought it, hooked it up. The nice thing is that I have a telephone that I can dial out, dial in, receive calls just fine, send out calls just fine. And the nice thing for me now is with work-related stuff, I just got my cell phone bill from this last month, and I have Sprint, and I'm on the Fair and Flexible plan, which they don't offer anymore. It's sort of an older plan. But the level that I'm on is, you know, I get, I don't know, 900 minutes included. Well, I went well above 900 minutes, and with the Fair and Flexible, it's essentially 10 cents a minute after that, and that's not so bad. Some of the plans they have now are like 40 cents a minute or something, and it's like, wow. So anyway, but all the same, it was still cost me $45 extra this last month. And when I looked at my phone bill, I went through, and pretty much all the major long calls that I had were because of work and being working from home and dialing back in the office and doing a lot of stuff via the telephone. It cost me a ton of money extra. And for that $45 that I paid, I could pretty much, I mean, obviously, I would have paid for this service for the whole year in 1 month and still had enough money to go to Cougar Country for lunch. So I think it's definitely a good idea to do this now, because now when I'm at home, I can use my telephone to do all my calls. It's not going to cost me any money to send off the, you know, to make the telephone call. And by doing that, it's going to save me a lot of money and a lot of minutes on my cell phone in the long run. And I also now have a phone number that I can give out to people that I don't necessarily want having my cell phone number. You know, there might be certain people that when they call me, if I'm not at home, there's no reason for me to be talking to them. I have certain business associates that if I'm not at home and I don't have my computer in front of me, I'm not really going to be able to do anything to help them anyway. So if they're calling me while I'm on my cell phone, they're probably just disrupting me, or I don't need to talk to them at that moment. So having a home telephone that they can call and leave messages if I'm not there, and I'll call them back when I'm darn good and ready, cool beans. I've debated on maybe even changing my cell phone number and notifying everybody of my brand new landline number and only giving out my cell phone number to certain people. I haven't gotten to that point yet, but I've thought about it. I'll probably ponder that debate a little bit longer, because I don't really have that big of a problem, but in some ways I'd like to have a certain separation between one of my jobs and everything else, because I'd like to be able to have there's times when I want to sleep throughout the night and I have to have my phone on and I cannot turn it off because I'm on call throughout the wee hours of the morning. And I'd love to have a phone number that is only for that purpose, that I could turn off every other phone, every other electronic in the house, and only have that one telephone on that, with that one number, that if they have to get a hold of me, only that person knows that number to call me at. But I'm not sure if it's worth how much ever money it'd cost. And that's theoretically what I could do with this right now. But the problem is that this place that I need to get my phone number to, they'd really need to know my cell phone. And knowing them, it would be confusing for them to have two different numbers and to be told, call this number first, then call this number, and blah, blah, blah. It's just too much work. I have to have one number that I'm always available at. So unfortunately, that probably won't work very well. But so anyway, Magic Jack, I'm not sure the website. I think it's just magicjack.com or something along those lines. You can go there and check it out for yourself. It's a pretty neat little tool, you know, for your time here at WSU. If you don't want to have a landline phone, but maybe all four roommates want to have one centralized telephone that you guys could use. Maybe you don't want to waste your minutes on your cell phone. You know, there could be, or you could be in a place that just does not have good cell coverage. Depending on who your service provider is, you might still have those around here. And if that's the case, you get Magic Jack, you still have a landline telephone. As long as you have internet connection, you got a telephone. So I guess the last thing that there's a couple other things I wanted to touch on today. But I'm really short on time now, and I just wanted to touch on one last thing. There's a former WSU firefighter from when we had the WSU fire station. His name is Earl Romig. He is a Grant County deputy, and many of you might have heard about this already, but he was out hunting, and he was shot by another person and critically injured. There's been a whole bunch of news articles as well as news stories on different websites. One of them, Krem.com. If you were to search for Earl Romig, you could see some reports. Randy Shaw just did a recent interview with him and his wife, and in it he talked about he was out sort of in the Moses Lake area, I believe it was, and he was out there doing some hunting, and he noticed a guy had raised a gun up towards him and looked through the scope. And about a half hour later, the same guy shoots this deputy and hits him in the back, injuring his, and you know, the bullet went through and through, and the deputy went down, and you know, he's like, you know, he quickly was able to see who did it. And you know, he had no ability to call 911 or anything. I guess he didn't have a cell phone. He used his gun to summons help by shooting it, but he actually originally pulled himself about 20 yards to a different location to get cover because he was afraid, oh, I just got myself in the middle of something. I don't know if this guy had just killed somebody else. I don't know what's going on here, but I'm obviously somewhere I'm not supposed to be or something. You know, so he's thinking, this guy's going to come after me, and he's going to shoot at me again, and I need to be ready for this. So, you know, he moved himself about 20 yards, and then he heard the guy's car start up and drive off. At that time, you know, he then worked on summoning help. And it took, my understanding, a good 20 minutes before somebody was able to get some help. And they had a little bit of a cell phone conversation that took place on the Krem website as well. It's pretty, and then he was flown to Harborview, and he spent about a month in the hospital in Harborview. And what's really interesting about this whole thing is reading the journal they have at a website called Caring Bridge, which is a way of people who are sick or ill or whatever to give information to loved ones, so the loved ones could read in about it, and you know, there might be links and photos, and they can leave guest book entries, and they can read a journal of daily happenings. And during Earl's time in the hospital, and even still today, they're updating this on a daily basis. And I found the website a couple weeks ago, and read through it and caught up on everything that was happening with Earl and his recovery and everything like that. And what's really amazing about the whole deal is how when somebody gets shot, you don't realize how bad the recovery time is. And Earl has been going through a lot. There's been a lot of pain. They talk about how there's sleepless night after sleepless night. And, you know, it sounds like he's going to have physical therapy for a long time to come. And it's just, it's nothing like they show on the TV shows where somebody gets shot and, you know, within a couple minutes he's in the back of the ambulance with this little sling on, and you know, who knows, within a couple weeks from there he's out and about and life's back to normal. You read everything about what Earl's been through, and it's an amazing story. And you know, he's a coug like all of us, and he's every news article that, or every news story that I've seen and every photo I've seen of him so far, every single time he always has cougar stuff on, whether it's shorts or socks and shorts and a shirt. I mean, he's a cougar through and through. And they recently held a benefit auction for him in a feed, and they were expecting, the family was expecting that, you know, they might be able to bring in a couple $100 to help out with everything. They ended up bringing in $61,000 at this auction they just had. So that's really going to help out the family. And of course, as a, you know, as a cougar brother, we all hope for the best for him and his wife and the rest of their family, and hope that the recovery is speedy and that he gets back to where he was before this all happened. And this is the PES on KZUU 90.7 FM.